Welcome. We are now going to look at chapter 6 of the IT compliance subject, in which we will look at compliance management. So we have looked in IT compliance the standards, the laws, the rules, the regulations, and how do we ensure compliance of whatever standards, rules, framework that we want to use in our own organization or at a country level. In this we will cover the big picture of compliance management, auditing and assessment properties, perspectives, compliance management, a systems approach towards compliance management, compliance implementation steps, ethics and compliance, and as always in the last we'll have some questions for self-assessment for yourself. So first topic, which is the big picture of compliance management. So there are several laws, acts, standards, regulation, methodologies, framework and guidelines for industry to comply with. Information and information system security, cyber security, electronic governance, communication are common criteria for technology security evaluation like FISMA, ISMS, Data Act, IT Act and all are the backgrounds of it. The health insurance and portability to improve healthcare services and protect patient data, the HIPAA Act. The IT service management, ITIL, ITSM, ISO 2000. Protecting the investors, so SOGs, GLBA, Basel II, payment card data security standards. Quality assurance in manufacturing and service industry. Process assessment, which is quality management systems, ISO 9001, 25000, SPICE. Process-oriented standard for overall control of IT, incorporating major international standards, which is COBIT-5, SCI, CMMI, risk management, which is ISO 27000 and ISO 31000, protecting critical infrastructure, CIP, standards developed, published by different certification bodies and institutions, both national and international. The challenges of implementing a compliant system that are consistent, sustainable and improving along with keeping the business running are enormous. We have just taken a small snapshot of all the rules, regulations, acts that one has to comply with. A very recent example in Indian context is the implementation of Aadhaar card. Aadhaar card was initiated in 2009 by Nandini Nilkan. And it was only three words that triggered off the implementation of Aadhaar, which was it has to be unique, universally accepted and ubiquitous, applicable to everyone. And it became one of the big programs of Indian government, and globally also it was one of the big social security or social welfare or social identification project globally that was taken in 2009. Now what happened? Parliament committee recommended reconsideration of this bill in 2013, citing reasons of lack of feasibility study, hasty approval, threats to national security, being directionless, using unreliable technology, need for privacy and data protection, lack of coordination among government agencies involved. So using these reasons, they said it has to be reconsidered. Now imagine a program running for 4 years in 2013, you're going to say it has to be reconsidered. Big problem. And what are the lessons coming out of it? One, whether it is mandatory or voluntary. What are the flaws of biometric and what are the escalating cost of it? What does a framework, the legal framework that is required for such a program? So you need a lot of legal framework to protect the people and the data of the person, whether it should be a physical card or just a number. There are implementation and data privacy issues. The biometric contract was with former US company. So what kind of data is going out? Is there some secret that is going out? System integration contract with Accenture PLC, another foreign company. So should we have all local companies, domestic companies, or we can't work with foreign companies? So risk. And this can be used platform for building commercial application. What kind of commercial application? Who's going to implement? Where? When? All these are questions, the learnings that have come up, that if it is not clear, if the thing is not backed up with legal framework, then these are the issues that we'll soon run into. for any project that we take. So at the bottom of it though, the lack of success of any large project boils down to leadership and the process management that you have. And there are several reasons for failure. Aadhaar was just one example. In even small companies, the major reasons for failure is, the primary thing is, whenever there is a misalignment of what you are doing to the corporate goal, your probability of success goes down dramatically. That has to be always kept in mind. In any project, obviously, when you don't have top management support, it's not going to work. So please don't take up projects which does not have top management project. There has to be buy-in from all stakeholders. If there is no buy-in and this is something that just dumped on them, you may still get away with it if you have a top management support. But overall, the implementation cost and the effort will be humongous. So it is always better to have stakeholders buy-in for any project that you undertake. Very important to have a project charter and strategy to implement the project. If you don't have a process to implement the project, then you will not be able to implement the project. And wrong reasons for deployment of standards. The standard has to be right standard, should be applicable to you, should help you to align to corporate goals. Top management has to support you for it to become a success. There are no right or wrong approaches. You could do a top-down approach or bottoms-up approach. It all depends on the project at hand and how it needs to be implemented. Many projects get success if they are bottoms-up driven, while some projects needs a top-down approach. It is for the project committee, the project manager, the project leader, the sponsorer to really figure out which is the right approach. Poor communication. In today's age and time, without effective communication, your projects will not work. And therefore, it is but natural that if the communication is poor, the project will fail. Lack of empowerment to the team, lack of teamwork, roles and responsibility missing, poor employee training, poor in infrastructure, lack of tools or wrong tools, weak project management are recipe for disaster in project management and implementation. Lack of clarity on role of IT in the initiative. In today's time, without technology, making any project work is going to be very, very, very difficult. So if in any project the role of IT is not clear, then your chances of success goes down dramatically, because then it becomes a very manual process. And with manual process, we have seen in the past that it takes high cost and high human intervention for it to succeed. And especially with IT being so easily available in today's time, not having IT in any project is a sure recipe of the project not really delivering on what it's supposed to deliver. Focusing only on output measures and not on the process or input parameter is also leading you to not getting full benefits of the project. Now, IT compliance, policy compliance goals need to make an organization operation effective in line with the objective of policies and guidelines defined by standards and frameworks. So whichever standard and framework that the organization decides to implement, the IT policy compliance goals need to align itself to that framework or that standard. Impeccable execution and constantly improving operational efficiency are prime requirements for any organization. So there's no debate on that. Organization have to optimize their processes. Again, no debate. And shift the thinking to process. In GE, when they started using Six Sigma, Jack Welch pursued, and we know where today GE is. So that's a big picture of compliance, why you need to have the right process, why you need to implement project and things like that. Let's now move forward to auditing and assessment perspective in IT compliance. So there are dual role, one of internal audit and external audit in IT compliance. For IT compliance, auditors have to go into specialized training. They cannot just come and audit. It's not a random audit. The purpose of doing an IT audit is to check the system's internal control, design and effectiveness. So you need to understand the system, you need to understand the technology behind it, you need to understand the process before you can do an audit of an IT system. It covers security controls, which is the server security, the user security, the usage security, the data security, things like that. Development, so how do you develop a system? Services, it covers the IT governance, oversight, data protection, and interdepartmental coordination. But for auditing to succeed, it has to be a planned and documented activity. It cannot be random. No auditor can just walk up and say, tomorrow I wish to audit you. He should know clearly why is he auditing, what is he auditing, how he will conduct the audit, what kind of inputs that he will need, and what are the outputs, what are the conditions that he wants to check, what are the controls that he wants to check. And then after checking, what kind of data he will need to be sure that the checking is right. All that has to be clearly defined and well laid down. Of course, the word auditing has come from Latin word audere, which means to hear. So auditors have to hear the users and how they are using it. Certification is a process in which assessment is conducted by an independent auditor and audit who comes and checks whatever standard you have agreed or want to implement, whether it's implemented, it's in the right direction, it is implemented as per what has been laid down. There's an external party or a third party auditors who come and audit that process or the product or the services, and then they give you the certification. So certification is taken from the third party or independent auditor or team. Assessment results in the evaluation in terms of positive compliance, non-compliance, and opportunities for improvement. So therefore, assessment of any adherence to the standards is very important from the organization standpoint. Even if you don't comply, you don't get certified to a particular standard, the weaknesses in the process or the practices that you're following clearly comes out from assessment and gives you an opportunity to keep improving upon it. And maybe by next assessment, you will get that certification. And of course, the result of successful assessment, as I rightly said, is the certificate which is provided by the certifying body. So auditors first verify whether there are documented procedures which comply with the standards to which they refer. Only when they are satisfied that there is a defined process, that means it's documented, written down, well explained, that they proceed to check if they are followed in the organization by the people who are responsible for using it. While assessment focuses on why people have chosen to do things the way they want to do and how effectively it has been implemented. Both descriptive and prescriptive approaches are valid. And standard is something everyone should aim to achieve. So what is the standard that we want to achieve? In a common jargon though, audit, certification and assessment are synonymous words and are used interchangeably, which is fine. All three of them have the same objective, that is to verify if the compliance, whether financial, product, process, capability or risk. Any audit exercise that is done by statistical sampling is never 100%. Examination. So auditors decide whether an organization is in compliance with the regulation and standards applicable to it, and one of the objective of auditing process is to correct errors or stimulate improvements, measure accomplishment and sustain compliance. Auditor obviously plays a key role in the success or failure of auditing process, and the whole idea is that the auditing exercise should be focused on adding value to the organization, and it should not become a fault finding exercise. It's just not some post facto, but it should always try to be ahead of the curve and try to add value in the process for which they are auditing because of their experience and vast knowledge and doing various audits before, maybe in the same company, maybe outside. They definitely can add a lot of value in the process for which they are auditing. What is a process audit? A process audit examines the resources used to transform the inputs into the outputs, the environment, the methods followed, and the measure collected to determine process performance. A process audit also checks the adequacy and effectiveness of the process control established by procedure, work instruction, flow charts, training, and process specification. So it looks at what are the inputs, what is the process that you are going to use to convert the inputs into the outputs that you want, How are you measuring them? What are the controls that you have kept to ensure that the output is in line with what has been the standard is listed down and checked in process audit. And during the audit, the auditors look at evidence. They look at evidence whether there are whatever has been defined is being followed, and what is the evidence that they are being followed. Who checks this evidence? Is the evidence right, wrong? What happens if the evidence captured or the data captured shows violation of a standard, violation of a process? What kind of steps have been taken? Has that incident been reported, etc., is checked during the audit. So, but as we said, the audit has to be a very planned exercise. It cannot be a random exercise. So there are generally recommended steps which are given to audit team to conduct audit. And typically the following are the steps which are carried out by the audit team. So they start always with a kickoff meeting where they meet all the stakeholders, whoever they're going to audit and whoever has appointed them to audit, where they explain what is the objective of the audit, what kind of help they want, what is the information that they will seek, why they are seeking, and any other question that is there on the table they answer. From that they come up with their audit plan. Then they finalize the areas, projects, business unit that will be audited. They review, they ask for documented process procedures first, as I said, and they review the documents provided and the quality of those documents. And if they are happy with it, then they get into the second step, which is then they gather data and test controls. And then they document deficiencies that they find, or if they have not found, they give a positive confirmation as well. They also recommend improvement process, and some are remediated immediately, or they verify the remediated controls of the last audit. They give a preliminary report on finding. They close the meeting. They convey success or failure to the management. And the management responds to it, and they track in case any remediation needed more time. So there's a date given, and therefore the auditor always checks for the previous audit report to check if all the actions agreed in that audit have been done or not done. So obviously not every issue identified by auditors are big. And hence they use two categories of classification or non-conformity. One is a major or a minor non-conformance or NC. A major NC is total breakdown. So something which has huge material impact is treated as major NC. While something which is minor, which will not impact the materialistic, but it is a deviation of the process and not well documented or agreed upon deviation, the auditor calls it the minor non-conform NC. It could be a single lapse or an isolated incident. As I said, the auditor also provides some observation or opportunity for improvements, and these are discussed with the auditors in the closing meetings, and if anything needs to be done on the recommendation, then those action plans are listed before the same is presented to the management team. The auditor's approach and behavior are important in auditing. He should be able to deal with diversity. Of course, he needs professional behavior, good experience, domain knowledge to become a good auditor. And he should not be led by person who's interacting with him or some biases that person may have, but all his finding and judgment should be based on objective evidence. It's not that the auditor is the whole and soul of the entire auditing process. The auditee also plays an important role. Therefore, in the kickoff meeting, the scope and the objective of the audit are discussed. Traceability of the objective evidence is a must, and auditee provides that. Important for the auditee to be part of audit process in a collaborative manner, because if the auditee feels challenged or feels, you know, as a victim, then the auditee will not provide all information. So although the audit process finding there may be no non-conformity, the auditor may not be able to give right recommendations or based on his experience some good project recommendations because the information is not given to him in the whole context. Audits are stressful encounters. Yeah, if you have something to hide, they are very stressful. But more importantly, they demand huge data and therefore time and effort. This needs to be planned, and the organization which goes through an audit process needs to keep this in mind. You need a good rapport. And finally, it doesn't matter what I think, it only matters what I can prove. Now, for compliance management, you need a systems approach in today's time. So, not some ad hoc approach. We'll look into it in topic 3. What is the systems approach to compliance management? So, a well-designed compliance management program, as we know, requires a system approach. So, there has to be a policy, goals and procedure management for compliance management. The policy should define who and what elements of compliance does the board want to see. The procedures and standards define the how. Policy creation requires inputs from the business stakeholders, because obviously what needs to be done, who needs to do. Management needs to provide the right direction for policy implementation. A formal well-designed document management system forms the basis of managing the entire life cycle of policies and procedures within the enterprise. For larger organizations which falls under multiple regulation, cross-mapping controls with regulations, it helps in redundant testing if you have such documents, and corrective action, documenting for the corrective action is very important. Policies must also include what, who will do it, and within what amount of time remediation action will take place. The policies and procedures have to be constantly aligned with the ever-changing rules and regulations. So, any change in rules, regulations, new circulars coming from regulator, the policy, the impact that it has on policies or procedures has to be analyzed, and corrective action needs to be taken. And therefore, you must have SOPs, which is standard operating procedures, and all SOPs must be aligned to the latest rules and regulations which the business has to adhere to or the organization has to adhere to. Design of standards. So, a good design of standard is important, especially when you have a multiple standard compliance requirement for running your business. So, for example, testing and capturing of defect data is mapped for both ISO 9001 as well as CMMI. So, hence attempting compliance must be proven by objective evidence. So, given that all standards are not implemented in same time zone, then it has to be a gradual build up and organization standards. So, slowly you should change from manual with incremental framework, revised process, work and revised work instructions, and little changes in forms, formats, and then keep changing it accordingly. But keeping this, reviewing is, and having due diligence are very important. Resource and budget management. So, we know people are the most important resource of any organization. So, compliance management requires managing resource effectively and optimally. Every implementation has lot of cost associated it. We discussed it in chapter 2, the cost of compliance and why it is important, and therefore each member has an important role to play. So, what are the cost elements? We've already looked at it, we'll relook at it. It's internal resources, some external consultants if you require, equipment, management time, automation cost, certification cost, etc. are cost of compliance. Some are direct, while some are indirect, obviously. And appropriating the cost for implementation and for the compliance process is important, especially when every organization nowadays look for ROI for compliance. Some organizations also have compliance champion. It could be one of the regular team members or a team member specially designated as a compliance champion, who ensures that compliance activities takes place.